Insurance Company. Whenever you're ready. Mr. Fuchs?
It's actually pronounced Fox, F-O-X, but it's spelled F-U-C-H-S.
All right, sir.
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Joshua Fox, and I'm here on behalf of Appellant Air Evac. This case presents a straightforward application of Ex Parte Young in that there's an ongoing violation of federal law, and we're seeking prospective relief. Judge Sparks, in dismissing the case and saying that we did not meet Ex Parte Young, committed two fatal errors, and he dismissed the case without prejudice. But he committed two fatal errors. The first is that he applied an enforcement analysis that neither this court nor the Supreme Court has ever applied in similar circumstances. The second is that he inappropriately separated the analysis of the rate setting that is done under the Texas Workers' Compensation Act and the balanced billing provision that's also under the Texas Workers' Compensation Act. Those two actually go together to create a box.
Why in your brief do you argue in the alternative the balanced billing?
So in our complaint, we made it an alternative argument, much like the argument that was in the National Rifle Association case, because it's the relief that could actually happen that could take away the federal preemption violation, meaning that if the rate setting was Texas is not going to set a rate in any form or fashion and allow us to get our full bill charges, then the balanced billing provision could stay in place. Or, in the alternative, you could take away the balanced billing prohibition. Texas could set a rate for the workers' compensation section. We then could go back to the patient for the remaining amount, which is exactly what happens in private insurance. So it is the box that's created that actually creates enforcement the minute we pick up and transport a Texas workers' compensation passenger. And so when Judge Sparks looked at enforcement, he should have actually looked at enforcement together. Which brings me to the main argument, which is why Judge Sparks, when looking at enforcement, applied a standard that neither this court nor the Supreme Court has ever applied. When Judge Sparks looked at enforcement, he looked for an imminence and a threat of enforcement. That is not what the Supreme Court is let me step back. He looked for prosecutorial-type enforcement. He looked for an actual body that's looking and putting the law directly against a body. When you look at the United States Supreme Court, in like the VOPO decision, Virginia Office of Protection Advocacy versus Stewart, in that case, it's an Ex Parte Young case. You had one state agency asking another state agency to produce medical documents. The state agency that didn't want to provide them claimed that state law gave them protection. Under the 1983 action, the state agency that wanted it and said federal law wouldn't allow you to have that protection, there's no enforcement in any form or fashion. In this court, KP versus LeBlanc is another great example where you have a fund that's being operated by a board. You have patients that come into that fund and say, I need redress for medical malpractice. The board decided not against the doctors, but to the patients, ruled we can't hear this because it's excluded from the fund. This court had no problem applying Ex Parte Young in that context where the doctors came in and said that the board made an inappropriate decision. And in fact, the language in KP, which is very instructive, is it defines enforcement as either involving compulsion or constraint. And when you look at the statutes together, the prohibition together, we certainly have compulsion and constraint. And that is enforcement. It's actually ongoing every time we transport a patient that should allow us to proceed under Ex Parte Young.
But in KP, and that does help you on some of your points, but in KP, the agency board had already made a ruling related to that particular issue. Whereas here it is more speculative. What in your complaint shows that there is a threatened enforcement, that you have any intent to actually bill these injured workers if the insurers don't pay?
Well, Your Honor, so backing up in KP, the board actually decided after the allegations were brought that they would hear the case. They just couldn't make a promise whether they would apply it or not. So there really wasn't a direct threat of whether it was going to happen in KP or not.
I thought there was that those actual patients had a claim before the...
They did?
I mean, there was a real controversy with the state agency, unlike here.
There is a controversy with the state agency here as well, Your Honor.
Unbalanced on the second part? You've never tried to bill a worker, right?
That is true, that we are not violating the law, and we contend that the United States Supreme Court and this precedent, this court, has never required in a pre-enforcement challenge that you actually be put into that Hobson's choice. And here, where the state has made it very clear that they, the law does apply to us directly, the balance billing provision. Number two, that there is a direct fine for it. And number three, that Commissioner Brennan is the responsible party for enforcing that, that they don't intend to not apply it. They just say we haven't broken the law. And if we do break the law, the penalty may not be $25,000.
Maybe this is more standing even, but it just seems very speculative. I mean, I find it unlikely you actually ever would bill one of these workers. I mean, your chances of collection are basically nil. Do you have any allegation to the extent that you're going to be forced to do that?
Your Honor, we don't allege that we're going to break the law at this time. But if that's all that it takes to make this case,
well, if you were an advocacy group who wanted to march in downtown Houston and Houston refused you a permit and said we are going to arrest you all and put you in jail if you do this march, and you say, well, we're not going to violate the law, we're going into federal court, no question about Ex parte Young, right?
That's correct,
Your Honor. I don't see any difference.
Okay. To the point, the National Rifle Association case, which is a standing case, actually provides really good insight here, because you're looking at two different statutes, one that's an open carry or concealed carry statute and one that's a criminal statute. But the criminal statute, in the court finding that they're standing, the key point is that the plaintiff never alleged that he would actually violate the law in any way. He never alleged that he was going to carry the gun in any form or fashion, and that the criminal statute would ever apply. But the court still found the likely connection there. And so we believe that the court's analysis in KP with the some connection or even substantially likelihood that we reach that if you look at balance billing separately. But as I started, balance billing shouldn't be looked at separately. It's all part of the same box that we're put in, and so that the minute we transport, enforcement actually exists. The court relied heavily on Okpolobi, and Okpolobi is a plurality opinion out of this court, but the key there is that it's directly related to governors and state attorney generals when there's no clear enforcement connection, and it's not absolutely clear that the law would even apply to the plaintiffs in the case. Here we have a much different situation if you look at balance billing separately, and that is the law directly applies to air ambulance providers in that you cannot bill. The law provides the exact penalty, and it even gives that Commissioner Brennan, in his sole discretion, has the responsibility of enforcing that. Now, there is some review, but even that review is not de novo. It's deferential substantial evidence review. So it really is Commissioner Brennan on the balance billing piece that has put us in the box. And if Judge Sparks' analysis was to be held true, pre-enforcement challenges such as the Abbott Laboratories versus Gardner in the United States Supreme Court would definitely be chilled, and the ability to come forward would definitely be chilled.
Wasn't that Ex parte Young itself even was a pre-enforcement challenge?
It was, but it was in the same context as Okpolobi. It was, again, an attorney general going forward, and it wasn't really truly clear whether the attorney general had the authority, so it's a little closer to Okpolobi, but we do believe that here, where there's such a direct connection, there isn't the requirement that you have a threatening letter, because it's clear also in the briefing that if we were to violate it, they would come forward against
it's us. It's not like Connecticut's prohibition on the sale of contraceptives, which hadn't been enforced for 80 years. If it goes to the heart of workers' comp, that the worker is not ordinarily allowed to pay, and therefore if a provider goes around and bills the worker, of course the state's going to come down on him.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, that's just silly to me.
So,
but I do have a question about this, while you keep hammering a gnat. As I understood part of the brief, the Workers' Comp Board said it lacks power to order any fees if the prescribed regulations are not overturned.
So, Your Honor, that gets to the merits of what the injunction would look like.
I was just wondering what the merits are of what you're going after.
Yeah. So, the The requested relief that we want is for the two laws to be enjoined. And the exact way that that would look still has a lot to be determined, meaning the state has to come forward. The court's responsibility is going to be to do the least amount of harm to the overall purpose of the Texas Workers' Compensation Act. Both the insurers and the state have said that means we have to go completely outside of workers' compensation. And if that's the case, we still get redress. And for two reasons we get redress. Number one, as this court recognized in the Maddox case, having a single regulator, if there truly is preemption, is relief. The second reason is that we could actually get an opportunity to get a full bill charge. Because if we were completely out of the Workers' Compensation Act, we could bill the insurer, I mean the person that was transported, they would have private insurance, and there wouldn't be an exclusion for workers' compensation, and we potentially could get paid
Nobody
for
private insurance. Nobody has private insurance for AeroVac, except occasionally when you go on a trip and buy trip insurance.
Actually, Your Honor, often if you're...
Does Obamacare cover it?
Certainly, if you have health care, it is covered. Now, whether it's covered completely because it's in-network coverage or out-of-network coverage and there's only a piece
but
that's covered...
Comp, I thought workers' comp was the insurance for workers.
It is, unless this is completely carved out of workers' comp in totality.
So then you're saying that all the employers of Texas are going to have to provide separate insurance for this eventuality or else be non-subscribers.
That could be one solution. Or another solution the judge could determine is that they do have the authority under the Texas Workers' Compensation Act to require the insurers to pay full bill charges. Another is to allow for balanced billing, which is the difference between what they said. There's lots of different alternatives, and that still has to be worked out on the merit side, presuming that we win on preemption. But the reality is that we would get redress. It may not be our full bill charge, but it would be a tip to get our full bill charge and bill our full amount and to have a single regulator, as this court recognized in Maddox, which is relief in this context.
What is the status of the hearing that was going to be held on last Friday, the 2nd of December, in this PHI matter in court there in Travis County?
Your Honor, we're not a party to that case. I believe it went forward, but we didn't attend. It's a separate air ambulance company, and it provides no collateral estoppel or res judicata effect on our case.
You're telling me you don't know what happened on Friday?
I honestly don't, Your Honor. I know that they had the hearing, and I know that it took place on Friday, but I do not know the outcome in any form or fashion, and I really honestly don't.
Well, I hope you're being honest.
I'm absolutely being honest. I've told you what I know, which is it took place on Friday, and the issues were covered.
You will after this hearing.
I will after the hearing. You're right, but I do not know at this time.
All deliberate ignorance.
Well, Your Honor, to be clear on that point, we are not a party to that action,
and
it's driven by a different air ambulance company. But I don't know, other than the hearing took place, and honestly, there was no ruling at the hearing. I do know that, and so I don't know that there's much to determine yet.
You do know what happened. There was no ruling.
I do know that. I do know that there was no ruling. On the separate point of whether or not additional requirements should be added onto Ex parte Young, we believe that the Coeur d'Alene decision out of the United States Supreme Court really forecloses that. Two judges there said that there should be additional analysis and case-by-case analysis. Seven judges said that that wasn't appropriate, and it's
what
never
about
been
let me think about the Colorado River abstention idea.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the most relevant case there is the Sprint Communications versus Jacobs case, which came out of the United States Supreme Court in 2013, which was an abstention case with a prior administrative proceeding that came to a negative result, and then the party went forward in federal court. And in that case, it was actually dealing with younger abstention, but the court gives really good guidance of when abstention would apply in this kind of context. Secondly, under Colorado River specifically, we have to have parallel proceedings, and we simply do not have parallel proceedings here in any form or fashion. We're not a party to the PHI action. It is not res judicata. It is not collateral estoppel. For our actions that are pending in and the administrative level. We're forced to go to that administrative level. We have no choice but to go to that administrative level. Each one of those has a separate, different insurer. Not all the insurers are even represented in this action.
One other question, which is that when you're pleading, now this may be a question of merits and not pleading, but they said that for injunctive relief, you have an adequate remedy at law, which is to go through the administrative system of Texas.
So that
once you get into court review, they can determine the, they can determine the preemption question.
Your Honor, I'm about to run out of time. May I briefly
respond? Go ahead
and
answer the question, please.
So in Quarterline, the court actually specifically said, I want to look to see if there's a state forum. And seven justices said that's not appropriate in any form or fashion to look to a state forum. And so I think Quarterline actually answers this question directly and on point.
Okay. Thank you. All right, Ms. Bennett.
May it please the court. A federal forum is not available every time a plaintiff alleges a conflict between a federal and a state statute and wishes to test the constitutionality of that statute. If that were so, the Ex parte Young exception would swallow the doctrine of sovereign immunity. Rather, Ex parte Young strips a state officer of his official status based on an action taken by him in violation of federal law. Now, Air Evac has a clear avenue to vindicate its federal rights by arguing preemption in the state court system. So the question in this case is not whether or not Air Evac would be able to vindicate a federal right, but instead whether it's appropriate to haul these state officials into federal court.
I find it sort of interesting. I don't think either party spent much time. I know Air Evac mentioned it. Decisions in Wyoming, Colorado, and North Carolina, all of which I think have favored the ambulance carriers.
Well, only one of those, the Wyoming case, dealt with the Ex parte Young question at all.
That seemed to be right on point.
And our position is that case was incorrectly decided. It's currently on appeal in the Tenth Circuit. The decision in that district court case did not discuss the connection to enforcement aspect of the Ex parte Young inquiry with any depth. So we would urge this court to consider that inquiry in the first instance, and furthermore, that's the district court opinions would not be in any way binding on this court. So with the principles that I started with in mind, I want to turn to this connection to enforcement inquiry. The Supreme Court, this circuit, and other circuits have consistently recognized that the Ex parte Young exception requires that the state officials be sufficiently connected to the enforcement of the challenged state action. And seven judges in this en banc court joined an opinion in Oak Pelobi that called this, in fact, Ex parte Young's fundamental principle. So this is not an additional requirement that's being added on here. So as an initial matter, the widespread acceptance of this connection requirement belies Air Evac's insistence that this is a straightforward inquiry with only two prongs from Verizon: whether the complaint alleges an ongoing violation, and whether the relief is properly characterized as prospective. This connection to enforcement test is fundamental to Ex parte Young and is not one of those two prongs from Verizon. So there has to be something more than just turning back to this straightforward inquiry and looking at the pleadings.
But this is rate setting, is it not?
This is a rate-setting case. However, it's different from the two other cases that did deal with rate-setting in some capacity, were Ex parte Young and the Verizon case itself. But in both of those cases, enforcement ran against the actual plaintiff in the federal lawsuit. And that does matter. It matters because the origin of an Ex parte Young lawsuit is that this is using as a sword instead of as a shield to protect against a future enforcement against you, as opposed to as a shield in a lawsuit against you. So it does matter who the enforcement would run against.
How do you get around KP versus LeBlanc then? Because it wasn't some kind of criminal enforcement action, and doctors brought the case, but it was really the patients who were directly affected by the denial of the compensation fund.
Well, in that case, both parties were affected. There, the board had applied a prohibition excluding abortion doctors like the plaintiffs from being able to access the state system at all. Here we have the opposite of that. Here we do have a state system that air ambulance companies get the benefit of. As Your Honor pointed out, the certainty of payment is much higher through the system, et cetera. So here the state is not keeping, is not applying a prohibition excluding these plaintiffs from benefits, but instead has applied them in a certain way that the air ambulance companies don't like. And that ultimately gets to the question of that Your Honor's focus on in the opening argument, which is what is the ultimate outcome that is sought here? And here there is not simply an act that the state can stop doing with respect to the maximum allowable reimbursement. If the state stops doing something, Air Evac does not get the relief that it seeks. What Air Evac wants is preemption only to the extent that the state is adjudicating a fair and reasonable rate. What they want is to take the state and use the state for its purpose of billing, of requiring the insurers to assess, to pay full billed charges.
They want to unilaterally set the cap that's currently in place. Why isn't that prospective relief? They want a federal court to say you can't cap what we bill the workers' comp carriers.
Well, there are two issues with that. One is that by eliminating, you can't just eliminate the cap, as we've discussed in the briefs.
Eliminate the cap if it's in conflict with federal law.
In eliminating the cap, it would eliminate the entire adjudication system.
That's what they want.
Right.
I mean, isn't that a merits issue?
Well, it gets to the nature of the equitable relief that is sought.
I sort of raised it with my question to him, but I mean, it does sort of go to whether there's a possibility of relief or whatever.
Exactly, and whether injunctive relief has been
properly
pled.
What it means is you're saying they want the law to favor them, and what you're saying is you want the law to be still favorable to the regulator.
Well, under Ex parte Young, based on language, for example, out of the VOPA case, the prospective injunctive relief that is sought under an Ex parte Young case typically says stop doing something. And so if we stop having the ability to set a cap, that doesn't actually get Air Evac the relief that they're looking for, since they are looking for something further than that, which is for us to enforce their charges.
Well, no, I mean, it goes to the free market, such as it is in workman's comp law, right?
Right, and so the ultimate relief that they're seeking would not turn this over to a free market, but would instead require the state to enforce as sort of a tool of the air ambulance companies. To enforce their maximum billed charges. But all this sort of comes back to the initial problem with the maximum allowable reimbursement scheme and Ex parte Young, which is that there is no, the concept of enforcement against the air ambulances is an alien concept under the workers' compensation system. The enforcement runs against the insurers. The state requires insurers to pay certain amounts to air ambulance companies. So if we look back to the language of Young itself, Young talks about civil or criminal proceedings that would be initiated. Okpolobi, the main opinion there, acknowledged that the federal courts have repeatedly applied a requirement of some actual or threatened enforcement. And in that sense of the word enforcement, it simply cannot exist under this scheme for Ex parte Young.
Dumb question, because I had thought Ex parte Young was a rate setting case where the company felt that it's you know, back in the old days had to do with the what was a confiscatory rate under the due process clause, right?
Right.
And I mean, if what they're saying is essentially this. They could make the same argument here. If they were and I'm not, this is an ADA case, but what I'm saying is conceptually, couldn't any provider of services under the compact come into federal court and say, we're suing the TWCA or whoever it is because the rates they are setting are confiscatory and violate due process?
Well, in Young, while they are similar rate-setting cases, like in Verizon as well,
the... Does answer the question I'm asking you?
Well, I would say that in Young, that was permissible because the state attorney general had filed an enforcement action against the plaintiff.
Right, but what I'm saying is anybody who charges more than the prescribed rates is violating Texas law, aren't they?
Is filing in Texas law.
Violating.
Violating. There's no mechanism under the Texas Workers' Compensation Act that would consider that a violation by the air ambulance companies. Where the violation would come in is in the balance billing context.
I'm trying to play out a hypothetical to you, and I'm sorry. Obviously not doing it very well, but my point is, take balance billing. Say a provider of services in Texas took the position that the amount awarded by the Workers' Comp Commission, the capped fee, is confiscatory, violates due process in the old sense. And in order to get a reasonable fee, they go around and they start billing the workers, okay? Now that's violating the law.
Correct.
Okay. They could come into federal court, could they not?
Correct.
All right.
Because there you would have a violation.
And the only difference here is that the putative violation is of the Airline Deregulation Act.
Correct.
Okay.
And, well, it's a violation of a different act, and also the enforcement action would run against the opposite party. For example, in those cases, the more proper analogy would be if the insurance companies came in into court complaining, making a similar complaint, saying, you know, you're requiring us to pay too much and alleging preemption. The Texas Workers' Compensation Act does provide that the state could pursue administrative remedies, including enforcement against the insurance companies, if they refuse to pay the amounts that the Texas Workers' Compensation, the DWIC had set.
So you're saying the only enforcement goes against the only enforcement goes against other parties in the scheme.
Correct.
Aside from balance billing.
Correct. And balance billing, as we've discussed in the briefs and as Your Honors highlighted in the original, in the opening arguments, the balance billing provision has not been violated, and furthermore, the complaint sets this up as a complete alternative.
I'm very sorry, but the timer was set incorrectly, and you've gotten a minute and a half more than you were supposed.
Apologies.
No, it's not your fault.
I never saw the yellow.
Technical glitch.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Baumgartner.
May it please the court, Matt Baumgartner on behalf of Texas Mutual Insurance Company. I would like to focus in my brief time on this idea of has Air Evac properly pleaded, requested relief that could possibly be granted? It's an idea that's been touched upon a bit, and it is not a merits question. Verizon's linchpin case, Air Evac's linchpin case is Verizon. Verizon tells us we look to the complaint, the prayer for relief, to determine if the movement has properly requested prospective injunctive relief the court could grant. In this case, in any ex parte Young case, all of those cases are all about stopping state officials from violating federal law. On page 22 of Air Evac's opening brief, it acknowledges that Young rests on the premise that the federal court can breach the sovereign immunity of the state only to command the state official to do nothing more than refrain from violating federal law. Do nothing more than. If we look at what Air Evac has pleaded for, it does not simply ask that the state officials who administer the comp scheme do nothing more than stop violating federal law. In its prayer, and this is at record page 12, Air Evac repeats the phrase, to the extent. It seeks a declaration that state law is preempted only to the extent that it is inconsistent with an award under state law for its billed charges. It seeks an injunction, not of the state officials applying state law, but only to the extent that they apply state law in a way that prevents them from recovering their full billed charges. So one can imagine...
Well, in a way that they can't apply state law in a way that conflicts with the federal ADA.
Well, that is no viable... I mean, this perhaps is a merit question. That is no viable theory of preemption. Morales tells us that. Either the state law is preempted and void and does not apply at all, or it does apply. But there's no preemption of state law that's inconsistent with federal law, and then what area that...
But they're saying these are aviation services, essentially, so the workers' comp folks have no business in that arena.
So
I shouldn't be setting rates on the aviation services.
With respect, that's not what Air Evac is saying. What it told the district court is that it wants to access the state workers' comp machinery. What it has is collection suits against the workers' comp system. It transports injured workers. It then bills the applicable workers' comp insurer. It then files, when it doesn't receive payment in the amount of its full billed charges, which incidentally no payers pay, there's no such federal right. Setting that aside, then they file a lawsuit for collections. In the only place they can do it, and they don't dispute this, so they go to the workers' compensation division. The first level of adjudicating workers' comp collection suits is at the Division of Workers' Compensation. So Air Evac files those state collection suits and says to those adjudicators, please award us billed charges. Now, what Air Evac seeks to do in this case, under the pretext of Young, not a core application of Young, is obtain some sort of district court order that it can then take across the street to the division proceedings that it's initiated, and it's initiated hundreds of them, and somehow manipulate the outcome of that proceeding.
I'll bet you Judge Sparks has the guts to not issue an order that's inconsistent with the Ex parte Young.
Well, I think what he did was dismiss the case that in a way that is consistent with Ex parte Young, because he properly recognized this is not an Ex parte Young suit. So what he did was proper.
What relief was granted by the Wyoming federal court? What was the injunction there?
Astonishingly, the injunction there, well, there was ultimately an amended judgment awarding payment, compelled payment by the state of full billed charges, which is wholly improper. That's on appeal to the Tenth Circuit. It's wholly improper, both as a matter of Ex parte Young. That's not any sort of injunctive relief, but it's also wholly improper under the Airline Deregulation Act, which doesn't supply any sort of substantive replacement for payment. But the fundamental problem with Air Evac's Ex parte Young attempt is that it seeks to take a first level adjudicator of a state system and compel that adjudicator to answer the state claims in a certain way, in its favor. In other words, the injunctive relief that Air Evac seeks, and Verizon again teaches us, let's look at the player.
If you're going to the scope of the relief, aren't you getting into the merits at this point instead of the justiciability?
No, Your Honor, not in this particular kind of case, because Ex parte Young is an equitable doctrine, and it is for relief. It's a request for equitable relief. That's what it is by its very nature.
I mean, again, it was a rate-setting case.
It is the worker... You could fairly use the term rate setting, but the workers' comp system, the fee schedule, or the more general standards, require benefits to be paid under workers' compensation insurance policies to all providers, and so it doesn't limit air carrier rates. It doesn't do that work. It's only when air ambulances, under the pretext that they're the kinds of air carriers that Congress was talking about in passing the 78 Act.
In other words, it won't pay for an internist who charges as much as you do. It'll pay for an internist maybe $150 an hour. I don't know, just as a matter. But it won't allow anybody to be reimbursed more than that.
That's correct. It doesn't purport to affect billed charges.
Right.
So it is just...
Well, except for the no balance billing.
That I would say that is also a reimbursement prohibition. I mean, that's...
Well, that's the whole point. It's rate setting.
Yeah, it's certainly limit... The Workers' Compensation Act certainly limits the reimbursement to amounts that are permitted under Texas law. So it defines the benefits the workers' compensation insurers must pay to providers. But this is, you know, one question was asked, how do you distinguish this case from KP? In KP, what we had was fund administrators, and they were blocking both patient and doctor access to the benefits of a, you know, Med-Mal fund. And they were doing so by applying an abortion statute, because that abortion statute says you providers who provide abortion services don't get access to the benefits of the tort reform laws. Here, that's just, there's a fundamentally different construct at work. What's going on here is, unlike in KP, if KP, the restrictive statute, the abortion statute, were eliminated, which it was, then the doctors and the patient could go on about their business as they otherwise would, avail themselves of any other remedies under state law that anybody else would. There was no additional work to be done. And so here, what Arivac is attempting to do is, you know, after initiating these disputes at the division and then getting, you know, having those disputes kind of go up in the lead case, which we just argued Friday, seeing that the outcome is not what they're going to want or not what they're going to like, then they come to federal court suing the first level adjudicators. And these are true, the division officials deciding these collection suits in the state system are true adjudicators. And they're seeking to coerce their decision in those cases. In other words, put them in sort of a straitjacket, saying you must apply, you know, whatever the amount we put on the bill, that's the amount you're required in these core state proceedings to reimburse, because that's the amount, to use the word from Arivac's prayer for relief, that is consistent with, or that's not preempted because that's consistent with our version of federal law. But they're still accessing the full machinery of the state system. They're still accessing the decision making of these adjudicators they're seeking to constrain under the idea of Ex parte Young. And there isn't a single Ex parte Young case in any of Arivac's briefing saying that federal courts can conscript state officials on the side of one of the litigants in a state collection suit.
Well, that would be close to the Prince case or the New York versus United States if you were saying that, but I really don't think they're saying that.
Well, if they're not saying that, then what they're saying is we want to get out of the workers' comp pot entirely, which means they would have no claims to any payment from the workers' compensation system. So Texas Mutual or their insurers would have no connection with them at all and would be under no obligation under their policies to pay them a dime. And then their only recourse would be in state court collections cases against workers.
Sometimes right. You want to beware of what you're asking for. But non-justiciable in the federal court. But.
I see the red lights up. If that's a question, I'm happy to. I understand.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Fox.
Briefly, Your Honors, I'd like to address two points. The first is the injunction factors. Judge Jones, when I was about to sit down, you had asked me about the impact of the injunction factors themselves if you get to the merits analysis. I think it's instructive what this court did in Maddox and also what this court did in the VRC case, where it said once you establish preemption, the rest of the injunction factors are already met. Maddox was a preliminary injunction analysis relating to the factors, and VRC was a permanent injunction analysis. As to the relief that we're seeking, we would like to get our bill charges. Ultimately, that is what we want. But we recognize that there's limitations around what the district court can do, and that it's going to take both the state and the rest of the parties actually talking about what that injunction will look like to do the least amount of harm to the Texas Workers' Compensation Act as a whole. And we recognize that that's part of the analysis. But that's once you get to the merits. It's not the gate setting that we're at right now, which is, do we meet the straightforward test that's presented in Verizon under Ex parte Young? We believe we do meet that. And for the reasons that we've stated, we ask that you reverse the trial court and allow us to proceed to the merits.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Okay. Court will now stand in recess for about 10 minutes.
Thank you.